Welcome to Fascism Friday, everyone.
We need a special visit.
Who is that?
This is our robot bird mascot.
Yeah. He hasn't visited for a while, so it's good to see him.
Back on Fascism Friday.
Yep. And today we're talking about the lingering Trump. Sounds like a type of venereal disease, which is apt.
Yes.
I'm Mark Van Strunk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike of the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
Live in a world where we don't have any reason whatsoever to talk about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
That's some sort of alternate reality at this point.
That sounds so nice.
Right. Yeah, so we had 2 weeks where it was like, oh my God, you know, Trump fomented this insurrection. That was bad. We're going to get rid of him. Yay. We've won. Even Mitch McConnell thinks he's bad for the GOP. That lasted about a week or so.
No, and you know, things are missing. I think there are more people willing to recognize that this problem isn't going away, but it still seems that that insight hasn't changed the MO of the Democratic Party. But the truth is, like, you know, we've been saying this the whole time, that if you believe in a conspiracy theory and someone tries to tell you the truth, you'll just double down on your conspiracy theory.
Right.
Cognitive dissonance is too much. So there are still, yes, there have been people that have left the Trump-mobile, but still a remarkable number of people within Congress are still clinging to these ideas that the election was stolen, that we still need to make America great again. They are undeterred, and it's not as though there are fringe within the Republican Party. The Republican Party is still the party of Trump.
Yep.
Because otherwise they'd have to fess up to, like, well, that was a mistake. I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah. Well, and so this is happening, you know, in a number of different ways, right? So, you know, one of the manifestations is that the people that voted, the GOP members that voted for impeachment are just getting hammered back in their districts, right?
Yep.
And the Arizona Republican Party, you know, is censuring all these wild liberals, the GOP folks that, you know, seem to not be Trump lunatics. You know, you've got this guy from Florida heading off to Wyoming to have an anti-Liz Cheney MAGA rally. So there's that level of it, but then there's the other level of it, which is, and I think in some ways this is perhaps even more dangerous or insidious, is that you now have the GOP doubling down on voter suppression,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they really are in full panic mode that, you know, that these white people can't win. And so you've got GOP state legislatures all over the country trying to now pass these even more draconian voter suppression laws, including one I just read about a little bit ago in Arizona that will allow the state legislature to just overturn the election.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to, just doesn't matter if it's been certified by the Secretary of State, that at any point up to the inauguration, the state legislature could just reverse the election.
you know, it's interesting to me, like, and I, you know how much I hate horseshoe theory, this idea that somehow if you go far enough left and far enough right, it's just kind of the same. But I will say something, like, that where there's a similarity in how I see it coming up. Like, I remember back when I was very conservative, that would have been considered kind of extreme within the conservative world. But I still, there was still this sort of Pat Buchanan-esque populism that assumed that the average American generally thought like Pat Buchanan. That was the assumption, that government needs to get out of the way and let regular Americans kind of run the show, kind of this anti-elitist sentiment. And that's kind of a core still of populism. But what I'm seeing both on the right and the left is this move towards authoritarianism that comes from impatience. And so on the left, the way it looks in some circles is that I have a ton of friends. Well, let's just say 25% of the leftists I know on the internet, which is a fair number, that would have been anarchistic are now moving towards some sort of Stalinism or Maoism. And what that means is they don't trust people organizing to kind of like percolate up into controlling this the machinery of governance. But instead, we need to have a more of an authoritarian takeover from the top down, right? So that's kind of the traditional difference. We're seeing that on the right too. The rhetoric that regular people need to, through some sort of democracy, have their voices heard has been replaced with a full authoritarian style populism where it democracy is actually the enemy. Those of us who know the truth need to seize and take control. And it's so it's becoming even more nakedly okay to rig the system, because it's not rigging it for selfish reasons. It's rigging it for the altruistic reasons of making America great like it needs to be.
Right.
So it's justifiable authoritarianism.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the ways that we see this, I mean, I find it very, very interesting the way that the Biden presidency has started, right? So you've got Congress over here, which is just in this complete chaos kind of cluster, mm-hmm. not really doing much of anything, right? And then over in the White House, here's little Joe just signing executive orders all day, right? Like that's all he's doing. He's just like signing executive orders all day. And, you know, I remember not too long ago, there would actually be a lot of discussion about, you know, is that okay for the president to just be signing executive orders? And is that a way to run the government? And, you know, now it's just like, well, of course that's what he's going to do, because Congress is dysfunctional. They can't, you know, find their way out of a paper bag. They're all accusing each other of packing and getting ready to shoot each other on the Senate floor. And so, yeah, Happy Joe is just in the White House, you know, taking over, kind of reversing all Trump stuff. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, this is wonderful. He's just reversing all Trump stuff. And it's a very, very bizarre state of affairs.
Yeah, I was listening to NPR with their calm tone of voice ever forever. They were interviewing, I think it was a deputy director of Health and Human Services, or some new appointee, could have been the top person, I'm not sure. But they were asking, like, well, you know, Biden's signing all these executive orders to roll back Trump, but like, if a Republican gets elected the next time, well, won't they just undo it? What about right. legislation? What about legislating some options here? And the response was like, well, that'd be nice. Like, that was kind of the response. Right. Oh, yeah, well, that'd be nice. As though that's not. And, you know, Trump kind of broke things because he pushed that button so many times that it's like stuck on now. We have to keep doing these executive. It's like ping pong and trying to, of course, we have to have it baked in through legislation. Otherwise, it's unstable and can be undone in 4 years. Of course. And that's really tenuous. Not that our society was so stable and glorious before, but now it's like these sort of vacillations that can happen every 4 years. That's a little concerning.
Well, and it's interesting when you look at, you know, chaos theory and mathematics. I mean, this state that we're in, there are a lot of parallels in that, you know, one of the things that dissolves a stable system into chaos is that you start getting bigger and bigger oscillations, right? And the oscillations become greater. And of course, you know, physically, we know that as things shake and move, they become more unstable. And so a system starts to oscillate wildly until it finally kind of breaks. And, you know, in most of our political theory, we were talking about this before we started. I mean, most of our political theory comes out of a certain level of assumption of at least some level of stability in some way, shape, or form. And you know, now as we enter into this increasingly chaotic state, which, you know, we see in Congress, this whole thing that we talked about with the stock market, and suddenly, you know, all of these regular people disrupting hedge funds, and then, you know, the head of NASDAQ just said, well, you know, we're just going to stop trading if we see too many regular people helping each other on social media, right? I mean, what an incredible thing, you know, to actually say this. Like, if trades and social media are running together, we're just going to stop trading. And so, yeah, it's not clear to me what is an appropriate political theory for a time of chaos. Mm-hmm. You got some comments kept in?
CK writes, I love the H.P. Lovecraft reference. Yeah, there's a very Lovecraftian vibe in today's picture and description. Considering the xenophobia and horror that Trump and Lovecraft share. Now everyone roll one D20, a 20-sided dice for sanity. Remember your elder signs, people. a little bit of H.P. Lovecraft speak there.
Yeah.
Yes, and thank you for recognizing that there was a very Lovecraftian influence, including my use of the word eldritch, which is a very Lovecraftian word. Mark writes, I'd argue the U.S. government has never not been an authoritarian establishment under a veneer or guise of democracy or republic. I mean, that's totally true, but there's something problematic when it becomes naked. It's not like I love things being concealed with myths, but at least when people start crying out for authoritarianism, it bothers me, I guess, is really what it comes down to. Yes, there's some benefits in having things be naked and obvious, but it's also really scary. So, but otherwise, I agree. Yeah, we've always had an authoritarian piece to our governance.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, the particular form of authoritarianism in the U.S. is whiteness, right? So yeah, as long as the white folks were obviously and perennially in charge, then there was the veneer and guise of democracy, right? And what's happening right now, right? And this is why, as I say, the GOP is in full panic mode, is that it really has become very, very clear to the white folks who are most obviously wanting to maintain that whiteness. Right. And there are a lot of other folks that say they're not, but still participate. But I'm talking about the people who are just very blatant about it. Like, I want to go back to the 1950s when my suburb was all white and everything was peaceful sort of people. Yeah. I mean, they are in panic mode because they realize, like, that's done. Right. There are so many people of color, you know, black folks who have been here, new people of color, immigrants that are coming, their authoritarian establishment is potentially and very really at an end. And they are freaking out. They're freaking out big time.
So he writes, Congress is a disaster zone.
Yeah, it really is. It's pretty wild, you know. It's kind of like the wall concept. You know, the head of the Capitol Police now wants to put up a permanent fence around Congress, and it's like, is that to keep people out or to keep all of them in? Mm-hmm. It's hard to say.
Stefan writes, there is a horseshoe. The anti-identity politics left, and in general, the anti-woke left are close to the right wing. Also, the anti-lesser evil voting left, like being okay with fascism winning because they hit the libs. I think the reason I don't like horseshoe theory is it gives people in the middle too much credit, because there are definitely moderates who are okay with fascism compared to socialism and blah, blah, blah. And if you want to say that if you go further left, you end up looking further right, I'm almost as far left as you can go on the political spectrum, and I don't see myself as being inclined to the right at all. So to me, the issue is across the spectrum, there's some really shit thinking that lends itself towards being controlled by authoritarian white supremacy. And you can even see that among the left. So it's a problematic problem all the way through, and it manifests itself differently in different places along the political spectrum. And so right now, this tendency towards authoritarianism as a response to authoritarianism bothers me. That's kind of where I was going with that earlier. Bev writes, are we talking about a lack of overall vision and leadership? Or at least the right kind of vision and leadership?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, right. I mean, it depends how we define that and what we're talking about. I mean, I think that, I think that the folks in the Trumpian GOP, I think they do have a sense of vision. And the vision is, make America white again. And that's what they want. And, you hear that in a lot of their rhetoric, where they'll say something like, and again, we were discussing this before we got going, they'll say something like, well, California has already left America. It's not that the GOP wants to leave America and create this fascist state. We're trying to reclaim America. Well, which America are they trying to reclaim? They have vision and leadership, and part of the issue is, what is the vision and leadership in a world that is facing multiple crises? And really, a human society that in many ways needs to be reformed and rebuilt and transformed. And the truth is that the people with the most material power, not necessarily spiritual power, but the most material power, that's not necessarily their vision, although there are sort of pockets of that in different places. But most of these people, they do have some kind of vision. but it's just, what vision are we talking about?
Yeah, and there's different ways of being deceptive. Like, so the right wing narrative has a clarity and a certain kind of honesty to it. The deception is that their white supremacy doesn't trickle down to poor white people as much as they would think, but it's still like this nakedly, they're stating this simple narrative that is fairly accurate for what they're going for, like xenophobia. The Democrats, it's hard to say what do the Democrats value, and how is that reflecting reality? One of the complaints that progressives have is progressivism tends to be a more populist movement, and progressives and radicals are upset with the Democratic Party for not telling the truth about reality. And so that's where the lack of vision comes. There's not enough reality telling, truth telling.
Well, and that issue of vision at a practical level, it really is a big one. And, we've seen this in Minneapolis over the last, over the last 10 months in a big way. I mean, if you look at the positions staked out by the essentially all Democratic Minneapolis city government over the last 6 months relative to things like public safety, public health, all of this, I mean, they are all over the place. It's like every other week they change their mind about what they want to do. And there really is no clear overriding vision or leadership of what progressive means. And, one day progressive means getting rid of the police. One day progressive means spending more money on the police. One day progressive means, having mental health outreach workers. The next day it's like, well, no, we're not really going to have that. They just kind of have no idea. And it's very, very hard when the rubber meets the road to say, what do these things really involve? Especially when you're often not willing to talk about the more general economic system, mm-hmm. right? Because as soon as you bring up something like, well, we need more money for X, Y, and Z, and so we're going to tax the wealthy, suddenly everybody goes nuts. And it's like, no, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen writes, if you think about how our country was founded, why wouldn't we descend into chaos? It's not like we began peacefully. And that's true at a lot of levels, because some of these problems we're facing are perennial. Mm-hmm. You know, we can specifically with the Civil War, like this is the unresolved legacy of the Civil War, but also it goes before that, from our founding.
Yeah, and you know, there was this great book, and it was actually turned into a museum exhibit that toured around called Collapse, where this guy kind of looked at all of these civilizations over history, you know, the Mayans, he looked at the Japanese Shinto imperial system, a number of others, and really looked at the issue of why do all these systems collapse and descend into chaos, and what are some of the themes? And what was interesting to me is that one of the primary unifying themes that he could find was ecological devastation, and that systems that did not relate to the ecology in a healthy way, you know, ultimately collapsed, and even within fairly short periods of time, right? And you know, we look at, for example, native small scale tribal systems, and you know, many of these systems existed for tens of thousands of years in basically a very reasonable, steady state condition with their environment. Why didn't they collapse very quickly? A lot of it has to do with some of the problems that come about when you start centralizing, when you have a religious system that, again, becomes more and more disconnected to the ecology. Our country, I think, is one of those systems that has always been teetering on the edge of collapse in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that the piece you bring up, like, I think a lot of people buy into this idea that ecological collapse is a modern phenomenon. And there's all sorts of research about how ecological devastation was part of the contributing factor for the collapse of Rome. There's all sorts of, this isn't new. The way we're doing it is new.
Right.
Like the widespreadness of our ecological collapse is new, and how messed up it is. But it's not as though human beings are new to the idea of ruining their environments or throwing them out of whack. James writes, "I fight authority. Authority always wins." It's like, I fought the law and the law won. I want that to not be
true. Little song.
Ceres writes, "Part of me is mixed about Joe going, just going to do executive orders. I'd rather have he do either the court or legislative, but not only 45 push the buttons too many times, but also Congress and Senate abuse their powers, installing shit and earmark crap even more than usual. Plus, neither majority or minority rule is always just and ethical. Ugh. Yeah, none of this is democratic in the full and best sense of the term. Like, we have our we don't have a democracy, but you know, we've never had one, but it's now we're not even trying to pretend as much anymore.
Yeah, and the other piece to this is, and I wrote a Facebook post about this yesterday or 2 days ago, and it's so interesting, the pushback in the comments about it. I mean, if you take national level polls on many progressive or quasi-progressive ideas, it is very obvious that the vast majority of the populace are in favor of these things. Right. I mean, the vast majority of the populace is in favor of single payer health care. The vast majority of the populace is in favor of reasonable gun control. The vast majority of the populace is in favor of economic regulations and policies that help the average person. Why are these things not happening? Well, because we have this particular setup, particularly with Congress, where a minority can run the country and can gum things up. And if those folks are mostly working for vested economic powers, it's not surprising that there is this huge disconnect between what's going on in Washington and what the average person feels that they need and want. And it's, but most systems are like that because the levers of power are held by and are designed for the people with the most wealth.
Mm-hmm. Khan writes, what do you make of the BIPOC people who voted Trump? I thought I saw he gained more of those votes. I mean, I've heard different conflicting reports about how statistically significant the shift is, like that there's some management, kind of massaging of data, that it's not as big of a thing. But the fact that any BIPOC folks vote for Trump is a little bit alarming, but it makes sense. I mean, poor white people vote against their the best interests all the time. And so it shows a certain level of internalizing of myths, believing in certain lies. Beyond that, it's hard for me to say as a white dude to speculate too much.
Yeah, I mean, generally, it's still a very, very small percentage of people. I read a number of things that said for a lot of men, it's connected to kind of toxic masculinity. But, you know, we're still talking in the single digits percentage wise. And, you know, the truth is that you're always going to have a small percentage of people that will go for anything from any group. Just the way people are.
Responding to that, Stefan writes, cultural conservatism, like being anti-abortion, against LGBTQ, also partly opposition to immigrants. The right wing is not only racism. And that's part of it too. There's multiple levers that the right wing uses. And some of them are tied into sort of a conservative Christian morality. I'm sure that's a big factor for a lot of people too. Tom writes, I think that the exponential growth of technology and social media has raised our awareness and ability to communicate and organize beyond our ability to govern it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think that that's part of the collapse phenomenon as well, is that systems get so big that they actually cannot really be managed effectively. And it is absolutely true that what is happening with technology is this massive change and experimentation in relation to consciousness and neurology and the human capacity to engage information. And we're still very much in the midst of that. And it's not really clear, you know, where that's going to go or how that's going to end up. But yeah, I think beyond our ability to govern it, and also the ability to create sort of endless distraction and to kind of check out, right? So technology makes people more involved, but we also know that there around the world are millions and millions of people who, you know, they're just hanging out in their room, engage with some kind of technologically based community, and they're not really engaged with how these systems are running. So it's all over the map and very hard to say where all of that is headed.
Mm-hmm. CK writes, it feels like we are 8 years out from some sort of paradigm shift in governance, because how can we keep going back and forth like this? And does it seem like government wants to go in the direction of full-on authoritarianism, but they will bake it in so people think it's for our own good and protection? Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's going to be a paradigm shift. To me, at the very least, it seems like pre-existing trends are accelerating and intensifying, and so they're reaching some of their logical conclusions. And to me, that happens because, at least in part, because we're in an ecological end game. As talking about just a second ago with this hyper fast information technologies, to me it seems like there's kind of it definitely hastens things, like things speed up. Beyond that, who knows? Like, this is the scary and exciting thing, is political shifts are not always predictable. Mm-hmm. Like, rarely can we predict where things are going to go. I don't care what Marx said, there's not a pure science to how history moves. Things get out of whack.
Wait. You don't care what Marx said?
Not about that. I don't believe in the pure science of biological history.
Just messing with you. Keep going on the comments.
James points out that progressive is a plastic word. It really is a bit of a Rorschach test of a word has kind of connotations that maybe are generally stick to it in the American context, but I mean, the first Progressive Party, you know, we think of Teddy Roosevelt, they thought that colonialism, the American style colonialism was great because it was bringing progress to the world. Even just the idea of like turning all of Central America into banana republics to, in order to kind of hasten the development of their infrastructure was seen as progress. And that's kind of a shitty thing to think about. But so it is a plastic word. Shah writes, responding to CK, my father used to tell me that people will give up any freedoms for a false sense of security. I mean, this is again one of those evolutionary things. We are, it's baked in. We want to be secure. We want housing. We want food. Yeah. We want to be able to predict the future and feel safe. And that is totally normal and good to want those things. Right. But then that can be game.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, Ekatemo Kieran talks about this in her book. She's like, you know, at a certain point, the poor don't care which party brings the bread truck. You know, and they just need bread. So,
Stefan writes, though ancient Egypt is an exception, it was a moneyless, pretty centralized society and held on for 2,500 years. I mean, that's...
Well, and what's interesting about ancient Egypt in terms of that is that their relationship with the Nile River was very holistic and very sophisticated. And the way that they related to the spring floods and the way that that got integrated into their religion and their religious practices and the way they understood that the Nile was this great source of life for them. So they had a very ecological ethos that was baked into all kinds of levels of their society. Again, religion, government, social behavior, housing. You know, they had these really sophisticated ways of measuring the river and predicting this. And, you know, I think that that's very much one of the reasons why they were so successful for so long. Because they weren't alienated from their environment.
And there are other imperial systems that also are a bit like that. You have Mesoamerica. I mean, it doesn't justify imperialism and that sort of strict centralism, but there are different ways of being imperial. Some are more ecologically damaging than others. But that's, so that's a good thing to bring up. I think we tend to like want to cluster all bad things into one. And so when you say empire, let's like put all the bad things on it. And unfortunately, life isn't simple like that. Decentralized doesn't always mean good,
right,
as much as I would like it to be. Jim writes, let's talk about platforms and solutions in one of the episodes, bringing people to the table. Bottom line must changes across the aisle. The current fringes, fringe plus R's, Republicans, are hopefully outliers. I mean, we could do that. To me, I tend to think that... coming up with a platform is not the best starting point when thinking about solutions. To me, it's about how do we organize better because the platforms already exist, which, I mean, that could be a whole conversation topic and maybe something where we bring on different guests.
Well, let's do that.
Jeff writes, Biden is still stuck in the system of the tail wagging the dog, signing executive orders and what the hell else, paperwork and policy. I mean, yes. And part of it is like he... to undo executive orders that Trump did, it makes sense to do another executive order, but you know, that can only work so far. Otherwise it'll contribute to this destabilization. And not even a good destabilization, like where sometimes things falling apart can be a good thing, but in this context, it's kind of scary. Gus writes, we've seen this year after year here in Oregon, the GOP walks out of Salem so that they don't have quorum. A small number of representatives hold the entire state hostage to the most mild steps forward. You know, and that's, I got to say it again, like the right wing is better at pulling levers. They're really able to maximize their minority position a lot. James writes, rule by executive order is executive dysfunction. but it seems to be a perennial strategy no matter who is in power. He also writes, I don't wish the MAGA crowd well in anything, but I also secretly hope the formation of the MAGA Patriot Party will signal the death knell of the two-party stranglehold on the government. I mean, that could be a fun outcome.
Yeah, well, and that is an interesting plot line. And I think that I actually think that the GOP leadership is afraid of that. And I think that's one of the reasons why so quickly they're now trying to solidify around Trump, because yeah, he was essentially threatening to pull the plug and start another party. And they were in full panic mode, right? I mean, McCarthy tells everybody, GOPers, stop bashing each other. We've got to hang together. And yeah, because if that happened, that would be really bad for the right wingers. I mean, they would never win another election for a long time.
No. Shilla writes, I think Jesus would love that Rianne Eisler shares through her work at the Center for Partnership Studies. So Rianne Eisler, I'm not familiar with the Center for Partnership Studies. That'd be interesting to look at. So thanks for
Yeah.
pointing that out.
Good
Ceres
tip.
writes, it is interesting that a lot of civilization that actually advanced and maintained that advancement because of being in tune with the ecology and cosmos. Being disconnected from that is honestly setting us back in the worst ways. Yep. And final comment from CK. How about a two presidential seat, one human and one AI? I think we should get rid of the humanity part altogether. I, for one, welcome our robot bird overlords and think they should have a shot at running the show.
All right. Good being with you all. Have a great weekend.
Yeah,
Love
we'll
you. We'll see you on
see you next week.
Monday.